Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is the Eurotrip.
You will begin with the country that is now in last place. And the United Kingdom gets 0 points.
You and I gonna light up the room.
This is the Eurotrip. So hello and welcome to yet another emergency podcast. We did one of these a couple of weeks ago when we found out that Turin would be hosting Eurovision 2022, and some very exciting news that appeared in your timelines earlier on this morning. At the start of this episode, of course, you heard what happened just a few months ago. We all know what happened with the United Kingdom in Rotterdam, but brighter times are ahead. I should have said at the very start, hello and welcome to the Eurotrip. I'm Rob, this week joined by
James Rowe, yet again. Thankfully, I'm here for the emergency episode this week because you know how disastrously wrong it went when it was just you, Rob. But also, it's not just us two. We've got a bit of a special guest joining us today. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, guys. Yeah, it's Steve Holden here, Radio 1 Newsbeat's music reporter. Yeah, it's been a really busy 24 hours because we have found out which direction the BBC is going in terms of Eurovision. And I have been chatting to the man who's taking on the challenge of trying to get the UK out of the doldrums. It is a guy, as most people will know, called Ben Mawson.
And like a Eurovision Santa Claus, you have not just brought yourself to today's podcast, you have brought your exclusive interview, which we're going to hear shortly.
Yeah, so last night I did a Zoom with Ben. I think it's the only interview he's done about this. He was in a hotel in Madrid. Ben is a big guy in music management, and for people that hadn't heard of him before today, he co-runs Tap Music, and they look after Dua Lipa, Dermot Kennedy, Lana Del Rey, Ellie Goulding. They've got lots of artists on their roster. I know we're going to hear from him in a minute, but he was switched on. I think that is the big kind of take home from talking to Ben and his plans for Eurovision.
So as Steve says, we're going to be hearing that interview with Ben a little bit later on. So make sure you stay tuned to the Eurotrip.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on social media. We're at Eurotrip Podcast.
That's right. This is the Eurotrip Podcast, our emergency episode looking at the UK's plans for Eurovision 2022, which we found out just a few hours ago. I say a few. a few more than a few, but today at least, which is very, very exciting, because we know now that the UK are going to be working with Tap Management. Very excitingly, we heard a little bit from Steve there about the guy who's behind it all, Ben Mawson. But before we find out even more about Ben, Steve, can you talk to us about how we got here? Because we kind of have to look back to look forward. We all know what happened in Rotterdam. So I suppose there's been a lot of soul searching at the BBC as to what was to come next.
Yeah, I think let's just go back to 2020 and the relationship with BMG that was announced. There was lots of promise, wasn't there? With My Last Breath and with James, and they had lots of ideas for how it was going to be staged. There was a lot of momentum, and then COVID hit and dreams were shattered. And I don't know what happened between 2020 and 2021 in terms of what went on behind the scenes at BMG. But something maybe wasn't, the spark wasn't there for 2021 necessarily, that it was there for 2020. I don't know if you guys would agree. So, you know, I did the documentary with James, and I cannot say a bad word against James. He is a brilliant guy, and he knew what he was going in for. The passion was there, and it was really heartbreaking to see him get no points. And I was there in Rotterdam, and I spoke to him a couple of days afterwards, and it was devastating for him. And then afterwards, where does the BBC go? Because I don't know what the conversation was with BMG, but quite clearly that's not happening anymore. And then there was probably a fair few options on the table. And, you know, before we get into hearing from Ben, I think there was a bit of a mutual, not agreement, but I think Ben wanted to help the BBC as much as the BBC maybe wanted Ben to help with Eurovision, because you need somebody who's in the know. I don't know whether there was any talk about an external selection, like a talent show or something like that. But quite clearly, they needed anything to get them off the bottom of the ocean, the bottom of the table. So there's probably been lots of to-ing and fro-ing this year. There's probably been lots of Zooms with Ben. But clearly, judging from what Ben's put out today on his socials and what the BBC has said and what Tap Music have said, they have come to a really healthy agreement that this is what they want to do next year. Wouldn't you say so?
I think it's really interesting that we've got to this point, actually, because, you know, we all know what happened in 2020 with the contest being cancelled. And personally, I think we wouldn't find ourselves having this new deal if that contest had gone ahead, because I think My Last Breath was a stronger song. I think the direction they were going to go down with the staging would have lent itself to a few more, well, any points getting on the board. So I don't think we would have found ourselves here if 2020 had gone ahead as planned.
I don't think, I completely agree. You know, I heard about all the staging for My Last Breath, which, you know, not being mean, it was a lot better than what we got for Embers, I would say. I think most people would agree with that. What do they call it? You know, when it's a blessing in disguise, maybe, you know, who knows what might have happened. It's like sliding doors with Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, lots of different like manifestations of what life could have been. But we are in this position now where we've got somebody who is very high up in music management and deals with a lot of very big artists and acts. And, you know, talk about Dua Lipa. She knows how to put on a show, doesn't she? There's enough performances. Think to the Brits this year. Think back to an American award show for Don't Start Now, where she had like thousands of people behind, and they put thought into how the performance would look. And, you know, that's something we need for Eurovision. So I would say it's in pretty good hands as an early prediction.
Well, I think everyone who's listening to this is probably screaming going, I'm here to listen to Ben. Can we hear from Ben? Which I think is fair enough. So the three of us will shut up in a second. But first, I do want to tell you, of course, that please tell us what you think of what you're about to hear. Get in touch with us on social. Of course, we're at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And we are on the email as well. hello@eurotrippodcast.com. But Steve, do you want to do the honours?
Yes, so this is me chatting to Ben Mawson, who is going to look after or lead the search for the act and the song for the UK next year, talking exclusively to Radio 1 Newsbeat.
I've thought it's a wonderful phenomenon. I realised how many viewers there were. Like, it's amazing, there's 200 million viewers, sort of double the amount of the Super Bowl. And I've always felt disappointed in how the UK's done, to be honest. And even though I wasn't looking for any extra work in particular, me and some colleagues at work were discussing it this summer, and we thought, you know what, it'd be good to try and, you know, Britain is in a lot of ways the home, or one of the homes of pop music historically. We've got a great track record of making amazing pop music, and that we should be doing as well as possible. And we thought, yeah, let's do it. It's not easy. Obviously, Eurovision's it's not simple. There's complexities, but I think our conclusion was it's not as political as people think. And I think maybe we should focus on getting some really special music and a really special artist that represents Britain in the best possible way.
So basically, you see the potential in this contest for the UK.
Well, I see the potential for anyone. I mean, look at what's happened with Maneskin. Maneskin are top 10 on global Spotify. Super Bowl has 112 million viewers as of the last count. Eurovision has close to 200 million viewers. So every artist in the world wants to be the halftime Super Bowl artist. And so this is nearly double the audience. So if you get it right, and it's a wonderful platform. So that's really our thinking.
How are you going to go about picking an act and picking a song? What are you going to be looking for?
Well, there are definitely quirks to Eurovision that don't necessarily apply to pop music generally. However, I think a good song's a good song. I think one of the important things with Eurovision is they're very strong live, because they've got to sing live. So we're very focused on that. It, you know, it's the same way we'd go about any looking for an artist in a song. We're gonna try and find the best possible song and the best possible vehicle, and I say vehicle, artist, to deliver it. I think we're not sure what or who. We're really excited to see what comes from the announcement. We want to do something that the British public is really proud of and gets behind from the start, because that will make a big difference. So yeah, that's it. And also, we don't want to see Eurovision as, you know, a boom or bust night for the artist. We want to see this as a platform for development and for a career. So they might be, we don't know yet that there'll be a new artist, but if they are, we want to make sure this is going to be a really positive experience, and that it's the start of a career. And then maybe they'll be established. We don't know yet. We're going to really be very open about the possibilities on that front.
Where do you think the UK has been going wrong? I mean, the last two contests, we've come last.
To be honest, I'm not really too focused on the past and what's been missing. What I do think is that the British public, there's a general cynicism and negativity in the UK about Eurovision, which isn't shared in Europe. Huge all over Europe. Everyone takes it seriously. We don't. We're going to take it very seriously, and we're going to apply everything that we apply to development of an artist and finding the right song. And obviously it's Eurovision specific, so there's things to be taken into account there. But I do know that there's that negativity, I think, and maybe it's a natural British desire. You know, there's something about the British psyche that likes to be a bit cynical and knock things down. But I think what we want to try and do is get everyone really behind what we're doing, and we really, really love the act. Not everyone's going to love it, but be really supportive and try to get a positive vibe going into it.
It's like a massive stadium show. What do you think you can draw on from that to get the kind of gold winning ticket for the UK?
Well, that's the challenge. I think this is a very unusual situation, because you've got potentially someone who's a new artist, and they're not all new artists, but some of them have not performed before, and then they've got to perform to that absolutely huge TV audience, and they've got to sing live. I mean, most artists do sing live, but sing live on TV to 200 million people. Plus, there's a very high-pressure dress rehearsal where the judges are watching. So for someone who's not done any, who's a new artist, that's a big challenge. So there'll be a lot of prep there, which is not just learning the song. It's, you know, it's mental prep. Maybe we'll find someone who's established, but I think at this point, it's more likely we're going to be looking for someone. We don't know. We don't know, to be honest, but There's a lot. I think there's a kind of pressure that is unique with Eurovision. If you're doing Super Bowl, you're a very famous, established performer. Still terrifying, but you know you've done it before. You've got to perform to double the amount of people globally, fully live. And yeah, there's all those pressures around the performance. I mean, I think one of the things with Eurovision is not just the artist, but also the staging and what goes around. So yeah, we're looking forward to it. I think that's what we do well. I mean, I like to think we do well with our artists, you know, that with their staging. I think they're known for that. And we're going to reel on all these people that we work with across all of our artists, whether it's Dua or Lana or Ellie or Dermot, and bring the best possible team around this band or artist. I'm not sure if it's a solo or a group yet, and make sure they have the best possible chance.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on social media. We're at Eurotrip Podcast.
So there he is, Ben Mawson himself, chatting to Steve Holden from BBC Radio 1. Oh, I don't really know where to start with that. There's just so much to unpack. I think the first place we should probably start is just the enthusiasm that he seems to give off. It's great to see that we can put a face to the name and a name to the face, really. There's somebody heading up the BBC's approach to Eurovision next year, Steve.
Yeah, and the sense I got from him is that he knows what he's talking about. This is somebody who isn't going in cold to Eurovision. This is somebody who knows their stuff. Maybe not every single little quirk of Eurovision, because as you know, Eurovision fans, we know quite a lot, don't we? But he knows what works. And I think that last answer about, you know, performance, song, artist, that kind of triple hit, that's what we need. And he is going to take this seriously. I thought he was quite honest, wasn't he? He said he'd been disappointed by the UK in the past, and that we didn't take it seriously, or didn't take it as seriously as the rest of Europe. Now, there'll be lots of people that would say, you know, we've tried everything we can, but it's never quite worked, has it? We've got to be honest. It's never quite worked, despite the best efforts of all the people that have been involved. So it can't hurt for somebody else to try, can it?
I've got a question for you, Steve, actually, which is, do you think somebody like Ben would have wanted to get involved, and TAP management would have wanted to get involved with the contest, had we not seen the success that Maneskin have had after what we saw in Rotterdam? Because they have almost single-handedly made Eurovision cool again, and made it possible that somebody like Ben might want to get involved. Is that a fair assessment, do you think?
I think maybe he was always, as he said, it was always on his radar, and obviously his partner hosted Eurovision in 2015. So he knows the contest, right? But maybe because the UK did so badly this year and Måneskin did so well, like the contrast between the two is really stark, maybe a little light switch went off and went, aha, I see an opportunity here. So to answer your question, I think the success of Måneskin has definitely probably influenced him.
Where do you think the confidence from Ben's side has come from? Because if we look at it now, it is a risk, isn't it, to put your reputation on the line and say, I think I know, or I've got what it takes to try and help out at least. If you did it 30 years ago, nobody would bat an eyelid. But doing it in 2021 for 2022, it is still seen as a bit of a risk, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what? Again, from the interview that I got from him, it sounds pretty clear that it's probably going to be a new artist, right?
Yeah.
And a new artist will not have the big live experience of that bigger stage. But then actually very few acts on the night at Eurovision do have that experience, generally, of massive, gigantic, high-pressure crowd moments. And it sounds like whoever he picks, whether that is solo or a group, that there will be training to get them to that level. So it's not like they're going in cold. They're not just, like you said, not just learning the song and learning what dance moves to do, but dealing with that mental pressure, knowing how to sell the song on the stage. So it sounds like he knows all the elements and how to package them, and also how to deal with the artist. It sounds as well like he's quite invested And that phrase where he said he doesn't want it to be Eurovision boom or bust for this artist. You know, this is maybe a launch pad for somebody in the way that it's been a launch pad globally for Måneskin.
There was so much, like you said, to like from what we've just heard from Ben. The thing that I really took from it, and I suppose this was especially in focus after Eurovision 2021, is that the emphasis will be on finding an artist who will be able to deliver a brilliant live performance. Because, you know, that's what people forget about Eurovision, don't they? Everybody says, who doesn't like Eurovision, they say, well, all the songs are rubbish and, you know, they can't sing. Eurovision is the biggest live event in the world, and the performance has to be perfect. And the vocals, yes, you are allowed a small bit of pre-recorded vocal now, but the vocal at the end of the day has to be flawless. So that it did feel reassuring to hear that from Ben, that would be a primary focus.
Yeah, completely. He said they have to sing. They have to sing well live. Also, did you notice how, the sense I got from Ben is that I didn't have to kind of tell him, prompt him, or convince him that Eurovision was a big deal. He knew it was a big deal. He knew the audience. He knew how much bigger it was than the halftime show in America, which every artist wants to do. I think he will make sure that all the boxes are ticked, because like we said, Ben is, Tap Music is not just Ben. There's his partner, business partner, Ed, and there's a whole gang of them. But Ben is basically putting his name and his face to this, isn't he? And he's got a good rep with Dua Lipa and with Dermot Kennedy, especially at the moment. Dermot Kennedy is like on the ascendancy. He's not going to put rubbish forward, is he?
The ridiculous thing, just to put that into contrast, James, before we get another question from you, was that we saw this morning quotes from Dua Lipa and Elton John about Eurovision. We wouldn't have seen that from, you know, BBC announced national final, or even BMG continued partnership with the BBC. We wouldn't have seen that. This is a step change.
Yeah, and getting Dua Lipa on board already gives it a bit of credence next year, because you can assume maybe that she will promote the song, she'll back the song. To have the UK's, one of the UK's biggest pop singers in the world right now, because she is, kind of endorsing whatever we put forward is a good thing. Look, let's just very quickly talk about cynicism, you know, about, because we have to address, you know, will this really work? Is it just another roll of the dice? There will be people that will say, regardless of whatever we put in, we're never ever going to do well. There's just something that just does not click between the UK and Eurovision, and that ship sailed long ago. And I think you know you'll always get that conversation, no matter if we put in the most amazing song in the world. And also, you know, why are we not putting Dua Lipa forward? Why is Ellie Goulding not being put forward? Why aren't we trying that? He's doing something completely different. But on the whole, the vibe I got from him is that he does really want to just put something forward that people, the British public, are going to get behind, not be cynical about, actually want to enjoy and root for. There was another kind of something else he said that wasn't in that clip you heard, was that he, you know, the way we get behind the football team in the Euros, he kind of wants something like that for Eurovision. So just a sense that people are behind this artist. They don't want them to fail. We want the country to actually make them do well, which is tough to do.
How nice is it as well, Steve, that he's not getting drawn into these conversations about the politics? You know, he's saying it's not all about the politics. And I think you asked him as well, what's gone wrong over the last 20 years or so? And he's not getting drawn into the conversations about the past. He is fully focused on the job in hand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When I asked him, it's like, what's gone wrong? And he just dismissed it. He was like, I don't want to look backwards. He knows what's gone wrong, I'm guessing. Didn't tell me, but he's probably got his own thoughts on, you know, previous entries and where we, you know, haven't quite struck the right chord. But yeah, very forward looking, knowing what needs to be done. And isn't it good that we're talking about this in October as well? October the 21st. Normally, we don't hear anything until February.
Just on the reaction to the news that we've had today, from your perspective, Steve, has it been overwhelmingly positive? Because from my end, at least, it looks like it has been.
Yeah, I would say so. I think it's the usual balance of people going, why can't we just put the Frock Destroyers from Drag Race in? Quite a lot of those. Secondly, we're never going to do well. Should send up, even if we sent Elton John or the Beatles, it would still be rubbish. I saw that on my colleague Daniel Rosny's Twitter feed today. But overwhelmingly, yes, there is a degree of cynicism. Like, we've been here before with a major company like BMG. Look how that turned out. But the people that reacted kind of most to my Twitter feed earlier, let me just find very quickly the quote. So when I put that Ben said Britain's got a great track record of making amazing pop music and we should be doing it as well as possible. Eurovision is not simple, but it's not as political as people think. There was loads of positivity to that. Isn't it great to hear somebody involved that's telling it like it is? It's not woe us, nobody likes us, we need to convince them. It's like, no, come on, not as political as you think. Not as simple as you think. It's not like the UK has a God-given right to win or do well. You know, you've got to put the effort in. So quite received quite warmly, I would say. Have you noticed that as well?
I mean, James, we have to throw to you for this because you've been front and centre of the British media today. Listeners, I don't know if you know, but James has been on Radio 1 today. James has been on the 1 o'clock news today. So... James, I don't know if you've had chance to check your own social media, given that you've, you know, probably been in makeup and dressing rooms of major studios across the country.
Yeah, they were trying to put makeup on me for the radio. I don't know quite what that says about me, but I think on my end, at least, I think from what I've seen on my Twitter feed and whatnot, it's been overwhelmingly positive. And like Steve says, we do, of course, get the usual comments from really those people who don't watch Eurovision anymore, those people who haven't watched for a good 20 or 30 years, who say, it's no good, there's no point of us watching. But, you know, let's fast forward in about 8 months' time when we potentially might get a good result and we'll see what the headlines look like then.
But it just proves as well, doesn't it, that the appetite is there, regardless of people saying, oh, well, we're not going to do very well, or we've seen this all before. That's still somebody talking about Eurovision. You know, at the end of the day, the audience in the UK, we know it. We saw it when we had the viewing figures for the contest in 2021 in May, earlier on this year. The UK audience for Eurovision is massive, regardless of what everybody says. So it makes sense for us to give it a go and see what we can do in the future, because you might, well, I was going to say you might not like it if you listen to this, but if you listen to this, you probably like Eurovision. You know, if you think Eurovision's going somewhere, it's not. Eurovision's not going anywhere. Because why would it? It's still hugely popular in this country. We've got a long future to look forward to. And maybe this is the start of something brighter. Fingers crossed. Anyway, this is the start of the change. Although we've definitely said that before.
Yeah, we have said that numerous times before. And James, you said on Radio 1 today, you know, the BBC has tried everything over the last 20 years. In my report today that I did for the news, you know, I think this started, this as I called it, a miserable run, because it has been a miserable run, started in 2003 with Gemini. That just seemed to kick off a run of mediocrity. And that's not to dismiss any of the people who represented us at all, because I met quite a few of them and they're all so lovely. But just the way we've gone from internal selection to big established artists, to new artists, to BBC introducing, to You Decide, back to internal selection, like nothing has really stuck. Now, a lot of people listening to this will go, it's because we never had a really great song. I would argue we have had some good songs. I would say Lucy Jones probably deserved to do way better than she did in 2017. Out of the recent entries. But on the whole, a bit like, I'll tell you who I often compare ourselves to, Germany. Do you know what I mean? Germany have had a similar kind of very bad run of results with the odd spike. 2018, I think they came fourth, didn't they? But on the whole, Germany have generally done as poorly as us. You know, but everybody can come back. And two last place finishes, who knows what would happen? I mean, if we're talking about this in a year's time and we've come last again, what on earth are we gonna do? But I guess people have to see.
We've seen from other countries what can happen. You know, just look at the top three in 2021. Italy, who since they came back, of course, have absolutely smashed Eurovision. But second and third, France, they've pulled themselves out of the doldrums. They were always amongst the bottom five with the UK. Switzerland, they used to be fortunate if they made the final. And look at them now. So
yeah, and Iceland as well. Remember, Iceland didn't qualify for ages as well.
It can happen.
It can happen. It feels like it's maybe the UK's time. Just like, you know, the Netherlands had their Anouk moment and Switzerland had their Luca Hanni moment. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
Steve, it has been absolutely fantastic to have you on this emergency podcast. And thank you so much for bringing with you your chat with Ben, because you're not going to hear that anywhere else. Of course, we heard some of it on Radio 1, which was fantastic. And we've heard and we've seen some of it on the telly. But you won't have heard that anywhere else. So just thank you very much.
No problem. It's my pleasure. And I think for anyone listening, now you've heard a chunk of him, like, what, 6 or 7 minutes. You can make up your own mind now as to whether he is invested or not. Are you cynical or not? You can make up your own mind now.
Steve, what a pleasure, as always, to have you on the podcast. Thanks for chatting. Thanks for bringing Ben along with you. Really, really appreciate your time. And thank you to you for listening all the way through. It was another bonus episode for you. It was another emergency episode. And make sure you get in touch with us on social media. We are at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And you can also send us an email, hello@eurotrippodcast.com.
And even though you've just done all the socials, you're now going to do all of the things that people have to do at the end of the podcast, because that's just your job. And I don't know all of them, or indeed the order.
Yeah, so don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review and rate us 5 stars. From me, James, it's goodbye.
From me, Rob, it's goodbye.
And from me, it's goodbye too.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.